This is the story Myself and You, written by Faith Unbreakable, read by Rena Jenkins. It is a Buffy Stargate Atlantis crossover, rated PG-13. Part 1. Slayer sighed, running a hand through her hair and frowning at the grime that stuck to her fingers afterward. She needed a shower, and food, and rest. Ah, hell, she needed an epidemic to kill all the wraith in the galaxy so she could for once, just once, close her eyes without a gun in her hand, stay somewhere longer than 24 hours without being made prey. The word left a bitter taste, even in her thoughts. A taint. And a rage more potent than any she'd experienced before that damn portal had dropped her right into the lap of one of the most vile and evil creatures she had ever met. It was a rage that had been boiling in her ever since that day. It had been slow coming at first, suppressed by morals and by a yearning for home, peace, love. But one by one, the wraith had stripped those things from her, leaving her the way she was now. Not prey, never prey. It was their fault to believe that they could break something such as her. No, Slayer didn't break. She bent, and she waited for her time, and when it came, she painted the walls in red. She was a tiger pretending to be caught behind bars. Bars that were not nearly strong enough to hold her. After 3 years of running from them, jumping from planet to planet every day to avoid being found and used for sports, she was the killer Faith had always known was inside. She sighed again, wiping her hand on her dirt-stained pants. Faith. She wished the other woman could see her now. She'd probably be proud. She'd point at her sister and tell the mini-slayers, "See? That's what being the Slayer is all about." Shaking her head, Slayer shoved the thought to the back of her mind. She had been gone for 3 years, as far as she knew. She had no clue how much time had passed on Earth. The Scoobies had given up looking for her a long time ago. That had been the deal when they'd founded the new council and started spreading across the globe. If someone disappeared, they spent 1 year looking for them. After that, they stopped. They stopped because a loss was a loss, and there was nothing to be done about it. And Slayer had always had a tendency of shaking everyone off and going on hunts alone, not making contact with anyone for weeks, sometimes months. Clinging to the past and people she would never see again was helping nothing. She was here now. She was alive. She was on the run, and she was damn hungry. Looking at the soft light of dusk settling around her, she decided that she had 12 more hours at least, maybe more. There was no wraith close to this planet, she knew. The trackers, while damn accurate, didn't reach very far in comparison to the vast space between some worlds. They would not catch the signal from the implant between her shoulder blades tonight. Unconsciously, she rubbed the back of her neck as if to ease an itch. It was a useless gesture. The thing under her skin was unreachable even for someone as limber as her. And the mound of scar tissue above it was all the proof she needed to never let any barn-world doctor near her with a scalpel again. So a quick wash somewhere, and after that, a big dinner at the local tavern it was. 10 hours of restless sleep, and then she would jump again. She hadn't been on Javor in almost 13 months, according to the ancient device strapped to her wrist and programmed to Earth's measurements of time. And it was nice this time of year. Ronan Dex sat hunched over his beer, ignoring everything around him and yet not missing a thing. The Wraith had been here a few weeks ago, making the planet relatively safe for now, but that didn't mean he was going to let his guard down. There was always someone stupid enough to challenge him. The door opened to admit a slight breeze from outside, and with it came a tiny thing of a woman. Her long blonde hair was in a practical braid reaching her ass, and her large eyes scanned the room, scanned the crowd for a bit of space and probably dinner. Her features were childlike and open, and in another lifetime Ronan wouldn't have hesitated half a second before going over there and flirting outrageously. In another lifetime. Now he simply envied her for every second she lived without fear and helpless rage crawling up and down her spine, and the impotence of a single warrior fighting a vast army squirming in her gut. She moved toward a free table at the back, sitting down and ordering some stew and water. The waitress looked at her a bit funny, not used to serving anything but beer, but complied, and Ronan turned back to his own drink. 5 minutes later, there was a commotion where the blonde had just started eating. Turning to watch the scene with careful eyes, he saw a burly, drunkenly swaying man leaning over her, groped at her chest and laughing loudly. She shoved him off with the practiced ease of a woman who travels on her own, but he came back. They repeated the dance 3 more times before she pushed the drunk idiot away hard enough to send him on his ass. Then she grabbed her food and stood, looking around for something. She seemed to find it as her eyes fell on him, because she started moving towards the bar and settled right beside him. She appeared for all the world to be a helpless, innocent woman, looking for a protector, and she had chosen him. The irony was not lost on Ronan. That, however, did not mean he was willing to save the damsel in distress.
"I won't save you, little girl,"
he growled, as he noted the calculating looks the drunks were giving him. All he wanted was to be left alone and enjoy one of the rare occasions that he could afford to feel relatively safe. He glared at her, waiting impatiently for her to back off and find another hero for the night. He wasn't someone she wanted to play with, even if she didn't realize it yet. Instead, she met his gaze head-on, and something flickered in her eyes. It was brief and almost invisible to all but those who knew what to look for. And Ronan did. There was death in her eyes. No, this woman did not expect to be saved after all. She could defend herself. She needed him only for his presence because they were both warriors, but the drunk idiots inside the tavern were too stupid to recognize her. They did recognize the tall, dark, brooding man beside her. Wordlessly, they both broke their gaze at the same time, returning to their food and drink. She paid for his next beer. As soon as the door to his room slammed shut, Slayer was slammed into it back first. She used the solid wood at her back for leverage as she lifted her legs to wrap around Ronan's waist and deepened their frantic kiss. His hands were on her sides, nearly encircling her, pulling her close with enough force to bruise a normal woman. But Slayer was no normal woman, and her only reaction was to dig her fingers deeper into the hard muscle of his arms. Ronan stumbled backwards toward the bed in the middle of the room while she tugged at the hem of his shirt, pulling it upward. She released him from her leg hold in order to stand on tiptoe and help him pull it off in one swift motion. Then her hands were back, tracing the top of his leather pants. She found 2 knives tucked into the back of the waistband and pulled them out, dropping them with more care than she had his shirt. He hadn't stopped when she found his knives, and she didn't stop when he found hers. They just kept kissing, groping, kneading, knowing without a word that it had been far too long for both of them. Slayer's hands crept up his spine, caressing and memorizing until she reached his shoulder blades and froze. There, right beneath her fingers, was a mound of scars that was the twin of the one on her own back. The same place, the same scars, the same doom beneath them, silent and invisible, yet enough to break a lesser man or woman. She could feel the low hum of energy emitted at all times under the pads of her fingers. Ronan did not freeze as he noticed her reaction, but took a step back and went for his last knife, dangling it off his loosened belt. The way he held it told her that he was getting ready to slit her throat as he growled, "Who are you?" What was she supposed to answer? "I'm Slayer, but I was once a girl named Buffy, and I hate them like you do. Fight them. Despise them." It was too much after such a long time. The first person that cracked her shell just a little after all these lonely months was just like her. He had the same enemy, the same anger and helpless frustration, the same flicker of horrible things in his eyes. He understood. He was the same, and he understood. The mere idea that there was someone else out there who was like her, who had experienced the same things as she had, threatened to fry her brains. He understood. He was like her. So she did the only thing she could, gave him the only answer she had left by carefully lowering her hands to the bottom of her shirt. She kept them in sight at all times as she lifted the tank top over her head and flung it to the floor. Then she pulled a braid over her shoulder and turned around slowly. There was a gasp behind her, startled and filled with a sort of crippled hope. He sounded like she felt. She wasn't alone. He understood. Ronan recognized the look in her eyes as she turned towards him again, the look she had given him in the tavern, because now he knew that it was his own. She was like him, was him, a mirror held in front of his face. He had never even considered that there might be others,
had assumed that this hell was reserved just for him, and now there was someone else. The knife hit the ground with a clatter as it grabbed her shoulder and pulled her forward, devouring her in a kiss. Sunlight was already trickling into the room when Ronan woke up with a groan. That woman was a devil, he thought, and then the rest of the night came rushing back to him. The scars on her back and, oh gods, the way she looked at him. Her eyes filled with hope suppressed so hard it was barely there. He had returned the look and seen himself in her. He was suddenly overcome with the need to see if she was still there, but he needn't have worried. As soon as he opened his eyes, she was there, leaning on one elbow beside him, smiling down at him, or as close to a smile as either of them ever came these days. Hey there, sleepyhead. Hey yourself, Slayer. He hesitated for a moment, hoping to draw a real name out of her, but she didn't take the hint. I should get going. I don't know about you, but I've been here for almost 24 hours, and it's time to get moving. The look of badly hidden regret on her face made up for not telling him her name. After the revelation the night before, they had spent hours seeking solace in someone they had never thought existed, but they knew it wouldn't last. Two people were easier to track, slower on the move, forgot caution easier. Alone, they could continue as they had, hiding, biding their time until they were free to slaughter every last one of the Wraith and paint planets in their blood. Alone, they would survive long enough to gather what they were owed. Besides, the voice of reason in Ronan's head whispered, they didn't know each other at all. He told the voice to shut the fuck up. Then he nodded. Yeah, we should move. As they dressed quietly side by side, Slayer kept sneaking glances at Ronan. Time and time again, she opened her mouth to say something, to ask one of the thousand questions that lay on the tip of her tongue. She always closed her mouth again before he noticed. She didn't dare ask those things. He was like her. He was a fighter, a survivor, a hater. A man living on borrowed time. She would not get attached, would not get to know him. Not now that she was finally cold enough to start forgetting about the life she once had. How long are the days where you're from? The question came out of the blue, startling her. What? How long are the days on your homeworld? She shrugged, not seeing the point, but not seeing any harm in giving him the information either. Most planets in the Pegasus Galaxy have their own measurements of time. On some worlds, a day lasted up to 40 hours. 24 hours. Why do you ask? And a year? She raised an eyebrow at his strange questions. Something over 300 days? He pulled out a small pocket computer, much like the one she was just strapping to her wrist again, but not ancient. He fed it some data before looking up through his dark hair. 300 of your days? Finally, Slayer caught on, and she couldn't stop the grin from taking over her face. They could not stay together, and they both knew it. But to have the assurance that somewhere out there, someone is waiting for you. She tied her hair into a messy bun at the nape of her neck. Do you know Jevor? Ronan looked thoughtful for a moment before nodding in agreement. There's a cave about 2 miles from the gate. I crash there every once in a while. As she made her way towards the Stargate, Slayer gave the mental order to her bracer, which she called FAT, short for Freaky Ancient Thing, to sound an alarm in exactly 300 Earth days. A small bleep from her forearm told her that her orders were received. She shook her head in mild amusement. 3 years ago, she hadn't even been able to write an email, and now she used the computer on her arm for the smallest thing. But then, it was also a lot easier to handle than Earth computers. All she had to do was concentrate on what she wanted, and voila! Instant service. She linked the bracer with the Stargate as she walked, dialing Jevor and walking straight into the gate. At the last possible moment, she turned her head enough to see Ronan's large figure a quarter mile away, and ruthlessly stomped down on a wave of hope flooding through her. The first year, they met in a cave 2 miles south of the Jevor Gate. She told him her name was Buffy. The second year, they met in an abandoned Wraith shelter 3 miles east of the Stargate on Sator. They spent hours tracing each other's scars and whispering the tales that went with them. The third year, They met in an old watchtower on Aura. She taught Ronan how to use a sword, and for a month they stayed together. The fourth year, they met in a tavern on Anlis, where he started the biggest bar fight she'd ever seen because a drunk soldier dared to grope her ass. He didn't come the fifth year. John Shepherd stepped into Atlantis with a wry smile on his face, followed by a smirking Ronan, a blank-faced Tayla, and a bitching McKay. What else was new? He wondered silently as he waved to where the geeks were typing away on their toys. Elizabeth waved back from her place right in front of the platform the gate stood on. How did it go? She asked. John's grin grew broader. Most people are tough. They're settling in well. They did almost drive McKay up the walls, though. Something about wanting to get a detailed explanation about how our computers work right now. And then he was interrupted when one of the geeks came jogging into the room, beeping wildly. Or rather, whatever he was dangling from his forefinger and thumb was beeping. He stopped in front of Ronan, out of breath, and squeaked. This went off when you were gone. It won't stop, and we didn't think we should be playing with it because, well, it's yours, so we locked it up because it was loud, but it still hasn't stopped, and... Ronan effectively shut the geek up by grabbing his handheld unit from him and asking in that slow, dangerous tone he sometimes got when something bad was happening. When? Sorry? The geek frowned while the rest of the team came closer to listen to the conversation and interfere if necessary. They'd all heard the dangerous voice before and knew not to take it lightly. Suddenly the big man moved, grabbing the scientist by the throat and shoving him into the nearest wall, hissing, When did this start to ring? Almost as soon as you were gone. 20 hours, maybe? Could you put me down? Down, please? Ronan let go, just as John and two Marines grabbed his arms, trying to pull him off the innocent messenger. He spun to look at Elizabeth. When he spoke, his voice sounded strained, like he really wanted to do something else entirely. I need to go through the gate again. Now. Dr. Ware closed her arms in front of her chest, putting on her best, oh, no, you don't, look. Why? She demanded to know. I need to. You are not going to leave the city until you slow down and tell me what this is all about. He stared straight ahead for a few seconds, seemed to consider something before he forced his body to relax. He was still tense, but didn't look like he was going to explode any second now. Instead, he held up the still-beeping device in his left hand. I was supposed to meet a friend when this began ringing. You just came back from a mission, Elizabeth reasoned. Get a few hours of rest, then you have my okay to go meet your friend. Ronan shook his head, making his team worry. It wasn't like him not to see reason, unless there were wraith involved. He pulled at his hair, giving a frustrated sigh that made John wonder just who this friend was and why they were so important. No, I need to go now. The time frame was 12 hours. She's probably gone already. If I don't catch up with her now, I'll never see her again. Rodney frowned from where he'd hidden behind Taylor when things started to get out of hand. She's a shy kind of girl? The glare he received in return was enough to fry a lesser man where he stood. She's been running from the Wraith for longer than I have. At that, everyone straightened. Longer than... Ronan had stayed out of their grasp for more than 7 years. He'd run every single day of those years, never settling anywhere, never resting, never letting down his guard. Even after almost 6 months free of the Wraith, the usually fearless warrior could still sometimes be found wandering the hallways at night, unable to sleep. To have run for longer than that seemed impossible. By the time they had found Ronan, there had been little human left about his behavior. He had been a ruthless machine, killing anything in its wake, caring for nothing and no one. But even though no one would ever say it out loud, Ronan had been close to the breaking point, close to giving up. To survive what had almost broken him for more than 7 years seemed too horrible to consider. Elizabeth felt a shudder go through her at the thought, but then her conscience spoke up. No matter how broken or cold this friend of Ronan's was, they would not sink to the Wraith's level and leave her out on her own when it was well within their power to help her. She turned to the scientist. Could you get Dr. Beckett, please? She gazed at Ronan. Find your friend. Help her. John, are you fit enough to go back out again? Yes. Ronan reached the ruins where he'd been supposed to meet his friend a full 5 minutes before the rest of the team came stumbling into the clearing, wheezing and, in Beckett's case, cursing everyone who hadn't helped him carry his kit. They found their friend frantically searching the area for any sign of life. All he found was a corner in the farthest room, clear of debris and leaves. She'd waited. She'd been here. He felt the same relief wash over him that he always felt every year without fail, when he lay eyes on her and knew that she was still alive. It did not, however, help with the guilt he felt for forgetting about their meeting. Sure, there had been a lot going on since he'd come to Atlantis, but that was no excuse. Not for forgetting Buffy. Never that. "She's not here anymore, is she?" John asked as soon as he found Ronan standing in the middle of a caved-in room, staring blankly at one corner. The tall man looked desolate. "No, but..." He moved toward the corner he'd been staring at suddenly. John followed him, looking closely, trying to see what his teammate saw. Then he did, and it looked like gibberish to him. It was obviously a message, but not written in any language he'd ever seen.
"You can read this?"
"Yes."
"What does it say?"
He asked, empty air. Ronan was already gone, and judging by the groaning coming from Rodney and Beckett outside, he was on the move again. John caught up with Taylor as they were nearing the Stargate. She sounded wistful as she said, "This seems very important to Ronan." He looked at her sideways and nodded slowly. "Let's hope we find her." They'd certainly try. If not to give Ronan back his friend, then because no one, absolutely no one, deserved that fate. Inside the abandoned ruins, two words in an almost forgotten language gleamed in the fading daylight. Year One. 2 hours later, the team was nearing the cave Ronan's friend was supposed to wait for him. It was apparently the same place they had met during the first of these annual meetings they had going on. Suddenly, Ronan stopped and turned to face John with a serious expression. "I want you to wait from here for me to get back." A raised eyebrow. "Why?"
"She knows you're here." Dr. McKay snorted and kicked up some rotted leaves.
"Then why should we wait? If she already knows we're here, then it's a bit useless, don't you think?" He earned himself a round of annoyed looks from his teammates, but ignored them. He got them too often to still be offended by them.
"She doesn't like guests."
As John shifted his gun from one hand to the other, in order to reach up and scratch his head, he wondered just who exactly this woman was. From what little Ronan had let slip, he imagined her to be about 6 feet tall. More male than female, grumpy, quick with the trigger finger, and not what was generally considered friendly company. Well, things could only get better, he thought with a shrug. Besides, he could empathize with her situation. He didn't think anyone was much for small talk after being captured, tortured, and cut up by the Wraith. "We'll stay." He received a curt nod and thanks, as well as some more grumbling from his resident genius, while one-fourth of his team disappeared into the dense forests around them. He snapped at Rodney to shut up, counted to 5 and a half, and motioned for everyone to follow him. Buffy lay in the middle of the cave, one hand behind her head, the other on her gun as she stared at the high ceiling silently. She could feel the nervous energy pumping through her system, demanding that she go out and find out what had happened to her lover. But she couldn't. She'd already broken their agreement by leaving the message and coming here to wait 12 more hours. Javor was dangerous right now. The last culling by the Wraith had been more than 15 months ago, and the villagers were expecting them every day now, looking at the skies in fear. The first time they'd met here after their one-night stand 300 days earlier, she'd promised herself not to get attached. Because she was a slayer, and he was strong, sure, but he was human. The Wraith would get him one day, and he would leave her alone again. Better not to let her guard down in the first place. And then he'd spent a full day trying every possible way to worm her real name out of him. It had been so human, so normal of him, reminding her of times when she actually had a name besides Slayer. It had taken 5 years for her to admit it, but now she couldn't deny it any longer. She'd gotten attached after all. She had one more hour until she had to jump between planets again, and only two more safe places she could go. Three, if she counted their very first meeting place as safe. That gave her, what, 36 hours? 36 hours until she would have to accept that the Wraith had gotten him, that he was dead. It wasn't enough. That was when her fat started beeping, and her spidey sense tickled down her spine, letting her know that someone was coming closer. 10 minutes after Ronan went ahead, the team found him waiting for them in a small clearing. He glared at them, but didn't object to their presence again, mostly because short of tying them up, there was nothing he could do to keep them away. He didn't have enough rope to bind and gag them all, so he listened to Rodney's snarking. How does she know we're coming anyway? I didn't see anything that indicated there were any sensors in the vicinity, and that disgusting wildlife all around us should make it impossible to notice us from any distance. She knows, Ronan replied for the fifth time in a suspiciously blank voice. He had gone increasingly cold the longer they searched for his friend. It was almost like he was slipping into old patterns again, his answers getting shorter, his tone harsher, and his overall demeanor was jumpier and edgier. McKay threw his hands up and howled in frustration. Yes, but how? I just do. The answer came from the tree directly above the frustrated scientist, followed by some rustling leaves and a blonde slip of a woman landing directly in front of Shepard, who stared stupidly. Ronan's friend was short, long-haired, green-eyed, and absolutely stunning in a distant kind of way. She wore clothes that seemed made for fighting and distracting men, and a bag over her shoulder as well as at least six different kinds of weapons, two of which the pilot had never even seen before, but seemed much too big for someone that small and skinny. The blonde stepped around the dumbstruck members of the team and stopped in front of Ronan, hands on hips. There was a barely restrained energy and a relieved anger coming from her. She seemed to vibrate with it. It reminded John of a ticking bomb seconds short of exploding and tearing everything around it to kingdom come. Not a comforting image. First you're late, and then you bring unannounced guests with you. Didn't your mama teach you that's rude? They're friends. Everyone felt the temperature drop several degrees as the tiny woman went very still, giving Ronan a look sharp enough to cut metal. We don't have friends. There was a note of steel in her tone that suggested it was unwise to contradict her as her hands left her waist and moved toward her holstered guns. She was getting ready to kill with no incentive at all. That, more than anything, spoke to John of the way her life was. They removed the tracker. Her stance faltered for a second, and there was a flicker of something behind her cold green eyes, so brief it took John a moment to recognize it. Hope. He couldn't imagine what it felt like to have something you fought for years upon years, drop into your lap suddenly without warning. He guessed it was too good to be true. What did they get in return? Armed with this new insight, John rested his gun on his shoulder and took a step forward. I think I can answer that. You see, where I'm from, we have this saying. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. She looked him up and down, boots to hairline and back, eyes flickering briefly at the sight of the flag on his shoulder before asking, Is he? Whatever she said would have said next never left her mouth, as the bracer on her left arm suddenly started blinking like a Christmas tree. She didn't even look at it before announcing, Several Wraith darts just passed through the gate. They are in full culling mode. Everybody tensed. They needed to get off the planet if they didn't want to end up as a snack, and they needed to do it now. There was no time for long-winded explanations and arguments with the woman they were trying to save. Rodney yelped as he caught the high-pitched whine of the darts in the distance. They had only a few more minutes, 5 tops. Buffy checked her data with a few concentrated thoughts and came up with much the same results. The nearest village was miles away and feared a bursting with food. But sooner or later, the darts would catch the signal of the tracker embedded in her back. They would come, their culling beams would catch them, and she would be a prisoner once more, treated like a toy, a game. She would be back in that hell, and she'd rather be dead. She looked at Ronan and found him staring straight at her. Their gazes locked, and Buffy took a deep breath and a leap of faith after 8 years of living without it. She trusted Ronan, trusted him with the only thing she still had left to give, her life. Do it.
Part 2. Everyone blinked at the blonde as she threw her bag to the ground, thawed by two guns and her shirt. She stood in the middle of the small clearing they were on, with nothing but a strip of cloth wrapped around her chest once and knotted behind her back to keep her decent. She pulled a long dagger out of her left boot and used it to pin her long braid up, revealing a mound of scar tissue in the same place Ronan had his own. It was a move that would have left most people with a new haircut, but she did it with ease before clarifying, "Remove the damn thing. We have 5 minutes, 10 if we're lucky, and they didn't catch the signal from the tracker right away." Dr. Beckett took a step forward and spoke for the first time since they had stopped their wild cross-country chase. He shook his head sadly. "I'm sorry, but we can't remove the tracker like this. It's embedded in your nerves and too close to your spine for me to do anything right now. If we had an hour, but not like this, you'd probably end up paralyzed or worse. You'll have to come back with us." She moved so fast it was impossible to follow, but when she stopped moving, Buffy had her gun pointed straight at Taylor's head. She'd made up her mind in a move that she would smack anyone else for. She wasn't going to back down. Not now that she could see her goal in front of her, closer than ever before. "I'm not leaving this planet with that goddamn fucking tracker inside me. I'm done running. Do it." She pulled a knife out of nowhere, wiped it on her pants, and held it out to the doctor handle first. Then she turned, presenting her back to him without lowering the gun away from its aim. Beckett didn't move. Ronan gave her a pointed look, receiving a minute nod in response, and lifted his own gun to point at Rodney. "Do it," he echoed, ignoring McKay's irritating screeching. Beckett looked at Shepard. Ronan lowered his gun when his point was made and stepped up to where Buffy stood, offering her something to lean against. Then they waited for Beckett to move. He didn't. Finally, Buffy lost her patience. Her fat kept blinking, screaming an alarm in her head, and the low humming from the darts coming closer did nothing to soothe her frayed nerves as her whole body was screaming at her, either to run or get in a position to fight, not stand in the open, vulnerable, invisible. It went against every one of those instincts she had carefully honed over the last 8 years. "Look, I know you swore that oath and all that, but I don't fucking care about your morals right now. Cripple me or kill your team with your hesitation. Your choice, Doc." It was probably a cruel thing to do, putting all the responsibility on the doctor like that, especially since he was trying to help her. But she'd made up her mind. She'd either walk through the gate a free woman or die trying. Right now, it was looking like the latter was more likely to happen. She tapped her foot impatiently. Beckett risked a glance at Shepard, who stood glued to the spot, watching, face expressionless. He gave a short nod. Carson lifted the knife with quivering hands, and Slayer could feel the cool metal pressing against her skin. There was a sting when he broke through, and then the familiar feeling of warm blood crying rivulets down her back set in. He gave his patient a moment to scream or cry, but she did neither. "Runner," he reminded himself. She was a runner. She had to be used to pain. Pain much worse than a shallow cut on her back. Then, muttering some Athosian curses that made Taylor blush prettily, he pried the liberally bleeding cut apart with his fingers and started digging for the tracker as fast as he could, trying to get it over with for all their sakes. Still, fingers and a hunting knife weren't likely to do her. They still hadn't been told her name. Much good. If he didn't cripple her, he'd at least leave her with an infection that might kill her. And to think that she was forcing him to do this, a bullet to the head was a faster way to die. His grumbling stopped abruptly as his fingers happened upon something smooth and slippery. He pulled, causing Buffy to hiss, and knew he had found that hated piece of technology inside her body. He gave it some experimental tugs that made Rodney turn a bit greener on the edges, and Buffy lowered her gun. Nobody moved. It seemed they all agreed that she had never meant to go through with her threat. She just needed to convince him to cripple her, damn stubborn woman. And he thought Ronan was bad. Finally, there was no choice but to pull up sharply and cut the tracker free in one swift but incredibly painful movement.
John watched as Carson dug around on the woman's back like nobody's business, and he had to admit that it looked gruesome. But more shocking was the fact that the patient didn't react at all. She hissed once and exhaled sharply as the tracker came free. Her head dropped forward to rest on Ronan's chest. He wrapped an arm around her and held her wordlessly as her gun slipped from her fingers. Then he took the tracker from Carson, dropped it, and pulverized it under the heels of his boot. A grim smile of satisfaction on his face, even as his friend's blood ran over his hand in streams. She remained standing. It was obvious that Ronan's support was more of a psychological than a physical nature, and John wondered what a human being had to go through to be able to take pain like that. And yet, he knew better than to feel pity for the woman leaning against his friend. She didn't need it, and if Ronan's state of mind after they'd removed his tracker was anything to go by, then she didn't want or understand compassion either. For her, every day was war, and weak people had no place on the battlefield. He didn't pity her, but he still felt sorry for her. She looked like she would have made a nice cheerleader, or maybe even a good mother and wife in another lifetime in another place. Suddenly Carson gave an inarticulate yell and jumped backwards, away from Buffy and Ronan so fast that he stumbled and landed on his ass. Still he kept moving, scrambling to get away from whatever had spooked him like this. Everyone had their guns up and were looking around for the threat when he finally stopped against a tree trunk and wheezed, "What are you?" He looked at the still nameless woman in Ronan's arms as he asked. Shepard whirled around to find the arm Carson was pointing, and immediately his eyes fell on the open wound in Buffy's back. A wound that was barely bleeding anymore. In fact, as he watched, the cut stopped bleeding altogether and even started closing. He gaped stupidly at the couple standing in the middle of the clearing. They were both ignoring the looks directed their way. Buffy breathed through the pain, concentrating instead on Ronan's arms around her after a whole year of not getting touched by anyone except in a fight. It was heaven. Or rather, it was heaven until the dear doctor noticed the rapid rate at which she was healing and screamed bloody murder. It had taken her a fair while to notice, but she had eventually caught on to the fact that with every injury she was dealt, her healing sped up until she healed within minutes. But she paid a price for accelerated healing powers. The re-knitting of bones and tissue at this rate was not as painless as Hollywood wanted people to believe. In fact, it hurt worse than some of the original injuries did. It had started after her resurrection, when she'd fought Willow for hours without tiring, but she hadn't really noticed until the first Turrican had gotten a hold of her. By rights, she should have been dead then, but she wasn't. After that, every single cut, bruise, and broken bone had healed just a bit faster than the last one. It was the reason why she'd made the doc cut her up like this. Within a few minutes, she would be healed enough to get moving again. She would leave the planet without a way for the Wraith to track her anymore, putting no one in any danger. Explaining that to Ronan's new friends would have taken a lot longer than they had, especially since they seemed to be from Earth. The people native to this galaxy were a lot more likely to accept things without understanding them completely. They had more faith and less science. "You're a Wraith!" Before Buffy could open her mouth, Ronan sent his famed death glare at Rodney and spat. "The only Wraith thing has just been removed in front of your eyes. Think before you open your mouth." Buffy smiled weakly into his chest. There was no greater insult to him than being compared to that which he hated most, and he seemed to include her in that. It was actually kind of cute. Finally, the searing pain in her back faded to a dull throb that still left her uncomfortable, but able to fight. She lifted her face to Ronan and pressed a quick kiss to his chin to catch his attention before ordering, "Help a girl, would you?" She received only a nod in return before Ronan carefully let go of her, making sure she wouldn't stumble without him. Everyone else was watching the two of them interact, finally putting some pieces together. Namely, that Slayer wasn't just a friend, and that he'd known how fast she healed. He bent and picked up her discarded things, throwing her the gun. She caught it deftly, wincing at the strain it put on the tender skin of her back. Then she used it to point at her cat.
All this beeping and blinking means they're still around, you know? If we don't get moving now, we're dead. And even I can't heal dead. With that, she turned around and took off into the trees at a fast jog, heading towards the Stargate with Ronan following suit. The SGA team exchanged some confused looks, before shrugging and following with mild sighs. If they didn't keep up, or worse, died, they'd never get their answers. For once, Rodney was ahead of everyone else. Taylor reached the edge of the woods last, the humming of the Dart engines not far behind her. The vicinity of the Wraith on top of that was giving her a nasty headache. She knelt beside the woman that had been introduced as Slayer somewhere along the way. "We cannot dial out while the Wraith keep the gate active from the other side. We're stuck." Slayer spoke with her eyes closed, an amused little smile on her face. "When the gate shuts down, you run. You've got 30 seconds before I shut it down again." There was some gaping on the Atlantean's part, while Rodney rolled his eyes and announced, "Look, lady, no matter how cool your name is, it is impossible to shut an active gate down from the incoming side of the wormhole." Slayer opened her eyes to give him a scalding look, one eyebrow raised. It eerily reminded the people from Earth of a certain former First Prime. "You have the gene," she said, pointing at the handheld device Rodney was still fiddling with. "Of course it's possible." Her voice was dismissive and cold, making it clear that she thought of him as a burden and annoyance more than anything else. Then she turned her gaze back toward the Stargate, and with a snap of blue energy, it closed. A scant second later, the slow grinding of the gate dialing anew could be heard. 25, Slayer chirped, as she jumped to her feet and took off in the opposite direction, drawing the single Wraith dart meant to protect the gate away from it. Elizabeth Weir was pacing the gate room impatiently, waiting for her best team to return home, with either an injured or tracker-implanted woman. A woman that was probably a stone-cold killer, and if she was anything like Ronan, she would be acting like a cornered animal upon arriving in a foreign environment where she would be at a disadvantage. It was a security risk that threatened to boggle the scientist's mind, or would have if she hadn't trusted every single one of the 5 people that had gone to fetch Ronan's friend. But they had already been gone for more than 5 hours. They should have been back in less than 3, which meant they had probably run into trouble. Usually, Elizabeth would calm herself in such a situation by walking into the infirmary and warning Beckett that he might get some visitors. The walking and warning gave her a purpose and made her feel less useless. This time, however, Beckett was part of the people she was worried about, and that didn't bode well. So she paced. She was about to finish her 36th round of the gate room when the shouting and blinking that signaled an incoming wormhole started. "Do we know who it is?" She received a yelled, "No!" from one of the people manning the controls. "The shield is blocked! We can't..." Whatever he had been about to say was abruptly cut off by none other than Dr. Rodney McKay, tumbling out of the Stargate with a yell. He was closely followed, and almost hit, by Beckett and his equipment. John looked a bit more dignified as he landed in a roll and quickly jumped up again, clearing the space in front of the gate for Taylor, who came running through, followed by some debris and Ronan. The last one through the gate was the one Elizabeth had been waiting for. She was blonde and tiny and came flying in much like John had, only she didn't get up after her roll, but stayed flat on her back in front of the gate, which promptly shut down again. For a moment, everyone in the room was completely silent as they watched the newcomers pick themselves up off the floor. Everyone except the blonde. John noticed the questioning looks he was getting and shrugged. Wraith. Then he walked over to the newcomer and softly poked her in the thigh with his foot. "You all right down there? We didn't save you just so you could die now, you know?" Her guns were aimed steadily at his head as she growled but made no move to get up. "You didn't save me. And how do you think I feel after getting surgery and running from the Wraith with you lot riding on my coattails all..." She was suddenly cut off by an ominous rumble from below. Elizabeth frowned at her technicians, dimly aware of Rodney already jogging up there and starting to order people around, trying to figure out what the problem with the city was. His eyes widened as he reached the first screen and checked what was on it. "What is happening?"
McKay frowned. The energy output is rising throughout the city for no reason. Systems we switched off are loading themselves and... Hey, did you know there's another secret lab behind the living quarters and... Wow! The city, seemingly unimpressed by Rodney's discovery, was positively humming with energy everyone knew they didn't have to spare. The lights got brighter, consoles started blinking wildly, and more systems and programs began loading themselves, all in the space of a few seconds. Rodney's eyes got wider and wider. John and Taylor were looking around wildly, looking for a foe that wasn't there. And Elizabeth had trouble standing upright. The city was rumbling so hard. I can't stop it! It won't do what I say! The city is going completely mad! It's a she. The correction was spoken so calmly and quietly, it almost didn't carry over the din of people frantically trying to put the city back to what it was supposed to do, and nothing more. Once more, everybody halted and turned to stare at the newcomer. She had sat up and was glaring at Rodney. The city is a she. Then she put both her hands flat on the ground, as a slow smile spread over her face, and she whispered, It's all right, girl. I know you're happy to see me, but you've got to calm down before you give all these geeks a stroke. There was a moment of silence, before a snort escaped her, and she nodded. Yeah, I'll tell the head geek to stop being so mean to you. And then, just like that, everything went back to normal, and the blonde slowly climbed to her feet. Upon looking around, she found everyone staring at her. She turned to Ronan. Why is everyone staring at me? They didn't know the city was sentient like this. Then how do they use all the technology around here? Elizabeth saw this as a chance to get a word in edgewise. Those with the gene activate the needed equipment, and the rest of us use it. The blonde wrinkled her nose cutely, which didn't match the rest of her ragged and tough-as-nails look. That's stupid. If you got what it takes to work with the technology, why don't you use it? Rodney was there suddenly, beside Taylor, pointing at the woman now resting her head against Ronan's shoulder. She looked tired suddenly, although John had the impression that she was hiding her true state of exhaustion. Either she was a lot more knackered than she was admitting to and couldn't keep up the facade, or, what he thought was more likely, she wasn't all that exhausted and was simply putting on a mask to protect herself from interrogation. She was tricky, that one, and slippery like water. That is how you activated the gate without dialing. He turned to Elizabeth. She seemed to be controlling the gate the same way Shepard navigates the puddle jumpers, simply by concentrating. It never occurred to me that the gate and the city itself might work the same way. This is...
Boring geek speak?
Yeah. John snorted. He liked Ronan's friend, despite all the questions her mere presence seemed to raise. Then Elizabeth asked, What is your name? Slayer shrugged and introduced herself, earning a few raised eyebrows from those that had not seen her in action on the planet they'd found her on. The mental image of her skin re-knitting itself over a shiny piece of spine that glistened in the bright sunlight was not something either of the team were going to get out of their head anytime soon. Are you going to stay here with us? Another shrug. I don't know. Ronan nudged her until she looked up at him and asked, Do you have anywhere to be? She shook her head. No. So? Slayer took a step away from him and looked at Weir. You're the boss here, right? She received a nod in return. I'm a fighter. I'm stubborn as hell, and I like to kill things. I don't play well with others, I don't tolerate weakness, and I detest authority. If you sneak up on me, chances are you won't do it again. I'm not a nice person, and I'm damn grumpy in the morning before I get my coffee, as Ronan can testify. If you can accept all that, I'll be the weapon. Her statement was met with complete silence all around. A few seconds later, Elizabeth and John pulled Ronan aside to ask him what his friend was talking about. He shrugged and calmly informed him. There's a reason they call her Slayer. After that, Elizabeth walked up to the other woman and extended her hand in greeting. Welcome to Atlantis. As soon as the words were out of Elizabeth's mouth, Rodney demanded that she walk with him throughout the city and try to activate different devices that he and his team of scientists had categorized as broken. He also seemed to be planning for Beckett to find a way to isolate what made her ATA gene different from everyone else's.
"Let's start with the jumpers." Elizabeth heard her head of science order in his typically hyperactive, "I just discovered something big" voice.
When she didn't move, he tried to grab her arm and pull her along. In a move too fast to follow, Slayer twisted out of his grip, grabbed his arm, and twisted him behind his back with enough force to make even Ronan wince in sympathy. Then she leaned in close and hissed, "You ever touch me again without my permission, I'll use that arm to beat you to death with. I'm injured, I'm tired, and I don't like people touching me. Besides, the jumpers are the other way. So, are we clear?"
"Yes, we... Ow! We're... Ow! Would you stop that? Ow, 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 ow! Yes, all right, yes! We're clear, really clear! Ow! Let go!"
She released him as fast as she'd grabbed him, and the whole team watched for a moment as Rodney rubbed his wrist and tried to glare at his tormentor. She didn't look very intimidated. Suddenly, the doctor perked up.
"How do you know which way the jumpers are?"
She looked at him strangely for a moment before asking, "You really can't hear her, can you?" "Shepard is the one who works the technology fastest, and even he can't hear anything." "That explains why she's so lonely," Buffy remarked, with the first hint of emotion in her voice since she had arrived, before cocking her head to one side and listening intently to something only she could hear. After a moment, her eyes refocused on McKay. "She says it's because the gene you all carry is diluted. Too many generations in between. Now, excuse me, I've got some sleep to catch." She walked up to Ronan, grabbed his hand, and attempted to leave the gate room with him. The key words being attempted, because suddenly Beckett jumped into their way with an exclamation of, "You belong in the infirmary."
"No."
"Yes."
"No."
"Yes, you do."
"No."
"You are injured. You said so yourself."
"No. Infirmary."
"But you..."
Carson was abruptly cut off by Slayer's exasperated cry of,
"Dex!" Beside her, Ronan stood a little straighter and asked sulkily,
"You rang?"
In that moment, John knew he would be chewed through and through and spat out by the doctor later for introducing Ronan to Earth's version of entertainment. "Is there a shower around somewhere?"
"Yes."
"Is there a bed near said shower?"
"Yes."
"Then we have a date. Let's go." As soon as they left the room, Elizabeth turned to her military counterpart and asked, "Do you think we made the right decision by letting her stay?" John grinned as he ran a hand through his hair idly. "She knows how to keep Rodney in check. In my book, that makes her my new best friend." Weir shook her head in wry amusement, a small smile tugging at her lips. After the shower, Ronan bundled Buffy into a fluffy towel and carried her over to his bed. He knew just how much healing took out of her, and even if she didn't want to admit it, he could still see the small signs of distress in her. Maybe because he'd exhibited them himself not too long ago. Within a single day, Shepard and his team had turned both their lives upside down by removing the trackers from their backs. It was a strange feeling to stop and stay still after so many years of running, always running. He tugged the sheets down and laid her on the bed. As he stepped back with the towel in hand, he caught her small smile of gratitude and returned one of his own. He knew who this woman was, knew the reason she was called Slayer. He'd seen her kill and slaughter, cutting down anything and anyone in her path. She was cold, uncaring and unfeeling around everyone. Everyone but him. Ronan knew how hard it was to let your guard down sometimes, to be human after acting like little more than an animal for so long. He understood the effort it took her just to let him touch her when she was defenseless. And he knew that he was the only one to ever see her smile like this. He was the only one she shared her greatest and deepest secret with. The secret being that she had a heart. He dropped the towels in his hand and around his waist and crawled into bed beside her, pulling the sheets over both of them. For a while, they just lay facing each other without saying a word. Then, slowly, Buffy inched forward until the tip of her nose was touching his. She pressed a slow but chaste kiss to his lips before pulling back a few inches and starting to toy with the pendant dangling from the leather strap around his neck. She didn't look him in the eye when she whispered, "I'm glad you're alive." He stopped her nervous hand by wrapping one of his own around it, and both of them spent a moment staring at the way their joined hands looked together. "And I'm glad you're here." She smiled as she relaxed her hand in his hold. "Yeah, me too." It was probably the closest they were ever going to get to expressing their feelings, but that was all right. 5 minutes later, Buffy was out like a light.